Hey everyone, welcome to the Pot Awareness Podcast, and thanks for joining me. This podcast is specifically for about educating and raising awareness for animals and rescues and organizations across the United States and world. It really goes a long way towards this mission when our listeners rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and all of our other podcast platforms. Also, be sure to check us out on our official website at pawawareness.org and on social media at TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at pawawareness_podcast. You can check us out for all of our latest bits and clips of our podcast, as well as Pet of the Week and Pet of the Month. If you're listening and involved with an animal rescue organization or have a story of your own that you want to share, reach out to us at info@pawawareness.org and we can get you on the podcast. Thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Paw Awareness Podcast. Today, I am grateful to be speaking with Genevieve Frederick, the founder of Feeding Pets of the Homeless. And I want you to go ahead and just introduce yourself, all about your organization, and I'm excited to talk with you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I love this opportunity to talk to your viewers, let them know what our organization is all about. I started this, it went nonprofit in 2008. So we've been around a while. In a couple of years before that, I came up with this idea that I could feed pets that belong to homeless people. It started on a trip to New York City where I saw a homeless man with an animal. Now I'm pretty close to where San Francisco is, where I'm at in Carson City, Nevada. And so we travel to San Francisco and there's tons of homeless people there. I have always been walking the streets with blinders on like most everybody else. The homeless become invisible, but when they have a pet, that is what draws people to them. Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat this and say that a lot, sometimes homeless will use their pets as a way to panhandle. But I saw this guy and he was just sitting on the sidewalk, not doing anything. The pet was there, no leash, no collar, just there with him at his side. And I thought, this guy's homeless. How does he afford to feed this dog? He can't take care of himself. It just stayed with me. And then when we came home from this vacation, I started doing a little research and I called a bunch of homeless organizations, like the National Coalition for Homeless. And there's a couple of other ones out there. And I asked their executive directors or whoever I could talk to, how many homeless are on the streets with pets? And they said at that time, this was like, you know, 2006, maybe 5 to 10%. And I was shocked because I knew that looking at these other websites, that there are 3.5 million homeless in the United States on any given year. People come in and out of homelessness. But I thought, if that were the case, that's a lot of pets that are out there with homeless people. So then I talked to my local food bank and I was friends with the executive director. And I said, Monty, what's the, you know, how many pets come through here? How many of your clients that come through? We have a pretty sophisticated organization here called Fish, and they provide medical care, food, clothing, showers, and they don't have a homeless shelter per se, but they give vouchers out for motel rooms. And we're a small city and we don't have a large population, but he told me that a lot of his clients have pets. And I said, if I could get you pet food consistently, would you start distributing it to low income as well as the homeless that come through the food bank and the soup kitchen? He said, absolutely. So then I went to my veterinarian and I said, how about if we put a receptacle in the area you know, when people are checking in and ask for donations. You might actually end up getting people that are buying pet food from you to buy an extra bag to put in this donation bin. So then they said, sure, we'll, you know, Genevieve, we love you. We'll do what you want to do. So I said, okay, let's give this a try. So I sent a press release to our local paper. A reporter went out to the Carson River, talked to a couple that had a couple of dogs, and they took pictures. And the reporter said, if you didn't have to buy pet food, what would you do with that money? And they were like, oh man, maybe we could take and get a site at a RV park where it had electricity, water, and sanitary, and or we could save up enough money to get an apartment. So that I thought, okay, that's good. It was in the paper that morning. By that afternoon, the hospital called me and said, we have got so much pet food here, you've got to come and get it. So that's when I knew that this was going to be something that I could do. So I started this in a bedroom in my home, and my husband was fine with it. He said, yeah, because I was bored by then. So because we had retired and I needed something else to do. And so this was it. And I knew from the very beginning, I wanted this to be a national organization. I could get businesses to become a donation site. And then the food banks would come and pick it up, or they could deliver it. So with that in mind, since 2008, these donation sites have reported back to us that they have taken over 832 tons of pet food and supplies to over 400 food banks across the country. So this is how it started. And then one thing led to another. I was able to get my 501c3. So we are a nonprofit. People started sending me money. We were starting to see people calling us, gee, where can we get pet food? So we put it on a website and where they could donate the pet food. But if they needed pet food, we also showed them where they could get the pet food. So one thing led to another, and one of my donation sites happened to be a mobile groomer, and her church would go out to this encampment in California, and they would bring them clothing and food, and Donna would actually groom all the dogs that were in this camp. And she called me and she said, I'm grooming a dog that has a horrible skin condition and needs medical help. Will you pay for this? She said, I will drive this dog to my own vet, but I won't be able to pay for it. And I said, yeah, I do it. So that's how emergency veterinary care came about. Since that time, we have spent over $2.4 million at over 1,400 hospitals that are in our network. And that is at that we pay at time of service. So when we have a homeless person that has an injured or ill pet, we can get them to one of our hospitals. We pay them at time of service, and they always give us a discount. Sometimes the discount can be thousands of dollars. When a dog's been hit by a car or there's needs to be an amputation, even teeth extractions can be in the thousands of dollars. So anyway, so we started kind of having to do an intake interview of these people, which we do now. And I have three full-time case managers. That's all they do all day long is take phone calls from homeless people across the country. They last year took and made over 11,000 phone calls, just those three people. So we're really extremely busy. And last year we spent over $500,000 at these hospitals. That was after they had already given us the discounts. So that was our second program. So it went from the food, then it went to emergency. Then we decided that we would start giving homeless shelters collapsible metal crates so that homeless and their pets could be allowed into a homeless shelter. This program isn't very successful because homeless shelters are so overcrowded, but we do what we can, and we've given out hundreds and hundreds of brand new metal crates. Our hope is that if somebody is homeless, they can bring their pet into the building. There is the possibility that they'll be connected to a social worker that will help them get out of homelessness. So that's the third program. The fourth program that we have is we will sponsor wellness clinics. A lot of times the doctors that we work with, they love what they're able to do. Yeah, they're helping these pets, but they know that there's more of these kinds of pets out there that have never seen a vet, who have never had any vaccinations. I can't tell you how many calls we get a week where the dog has parvo, and it's such a treatable, non-expensive vaccination. However, if you're homeless, you can't even afford a low cost clinic. You just don't have the resources. So we decided that when these vets called and said, what else can we do? I said, well, you can be a donation site. You can help us by what you're doing now by taking our emergency cases. But if you really want to do more, I would ask you to go out to where the homeless congregate. It could be at the food bank. It could be in a forest. It could be in a parking lot at a church. Do an on-site wellness clinic. Give these dogs their first vaccinations, or maybe they just need a booster. They just need it updated. Give them a basic exam. If they're ill or injured, have that person call our office and talk to one of my case managers. So we will sponsor all the hard costs for these wellness clinics. And we have done hundreds of them across the country. Some of our vets, they see the advantage of this so much to help their community that they will even do it to give the treat dogs that are just in line for the day. They don't have to be homeless. They don't have to verify they're homeless. If they want to line up in back of 50 other dogs to get this, that's fine. You know, we're just happy that we're able to afford to be able to give these dogs that opportunity and those people. These people love their animals so much. They're especially the homeless, they're with them 24/7. And the dogs, it doesn't matter if they have a vehicle to sleep in or just sitting or a tent next to their owner. That's their home. So that's the fourth program. We just started our fifth program, which we call veteran pet support. We've always helped homeless veterans, but now we're working with the VA and we're working with them so that if they have a homeless person, that they were able to get off the streets and into programs for disabilities or for addiction, whatever it is that they needed to get out of homelessness. They're working with HUD and the VA are working together to get these homeless veterans off the streets. And the program has been very, very successful. I was just reading a report from my staff. Right now, this week, we have 126 pending cases. Of those, 19 of those are homeless veterans that we're working with a case manager at the VA with, because we've had to, unfortunately, start to verify homelessness. We were scammed so much one year. People would just call and claim they were homeless and they had a story and they were good actors even though they're bad actors and were taking advantage of us. So now we have to verify homelessness. And so that's where a lot of those 126 cases are. We're waiting to get a call back from someone that can verify that this person is homeless. Anyway, so those pending cases are cases that we're waiting for an appointment at one of our hospitals. We're waiting for the hospital to call. We've already pre-approved an exam. Now we're waiting to hear back from the hospital staff. This dog needs x-rays. This cat needs blood work. We need to find out what is the estimate cost going to be for this animal to get treated. So we need to find that out. And so we keep very good records on what's happening with our homeless population and what's happening with their animals. So that's the five programs. I've kind of rambled on. So now, Chris, jump in and ask me any questions that you have about any of these programs.
Yeah, so I'm curious to know, like, from the start, right, when you had that light bulb in your head from, like, I'm going to research this, to, like, the actual, from the vet hospital calling you, like, saying, hey, we have too much food. Between there, like, what was the timeline on that? Like, how long was that window about, like, approximately? Was it like a year, or was it pretty quick, or what was that like?
Once I decided that this was the route we were going to take, and everybody in my town agreed to it, that yes, this is going to work, that's when I knew it would work. That's when I started reaching out to other veterinary hospitals saying, would you put a bin in your reception area and work with a food bank in your town? And then I started getting volunteers wanting to, you know, what can I do? And it was like, if you can get some donation sites in your town, that pet food is going to stay in your community. And you know where the food bank is, or what the other resources are for these homeless people. So you could be that advocate for that human and their pet. I can't tell you how many times we've heard stories that, if it wasn't for my pet, I would have committed suicide because I have nothing to live for. That pet gives them that unconditional love, that protection. And we all know that homeless are discriminated against. They are murdered on the streets. They are beaten up. It's very dangerous. And I have to tell you that 61% of our cases are homeless women. They're living in their cars. In Santa Barbara, where you're at, I know they have some safe parking lots where they can park their cars and feel safe for the night. Otherwise, so what happens is these animals, no matter how big they are or how small they are, they can alert their owner that there's danger, that somebody's coming up to our car or somebody's coming up to our basket that we, you know, cart around town, or they're sleeping. A lot of people don't realize that the nights are the most dangerous for these people. That's why we see them many times sleeping on park benches or in the library. They're dozing off because that's the only time they can really sleep and feel halfway safe, because it's light and there's people around that hopefully would help them if they needed help from somebody that wanted to do harm.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to even imagine, having even been in their shoes. I mean, earlier on, you mentioned how, you know, like, maybe you can't really say, maybe some of the ones that have animals are using them to help get food. And it's like, I can't say I wouldn't do that if I had a pet too. I mean, I was homeless. Like, I've never been homeless, so I can't say I wouldn't do that. That's crazy. And I think it was the third program you mentioned. It was the one with the collapsible cage. And you mentioned that it wasn't as successful as it could be, and I want to know what's the determinant of what makes something successful or not in your organization's view.
In our organization, my goal was to try to get every homeless shelter out there to at least have one crate so that one man and that dog or cat or that woman could get inside out of the snow, out of the heat, whatever the circumstances were, that they could get some kind of shelter and a meal, and their pet would be with them. You have to remember that the pets are with these people 24/7. So putting the pet in a kennel in another part of the building, their separation anxiety, and the pet isn't happy and the human doesn't feel safe because the pet isn't with them. So by having a crate next to their cot for the night, and everybody stays calm. And that was my goal, was I want to have at least one crate in every homeless shelter. But that's a segment of the people lining up every night to get into that shelter that they can turn away. We don't allow pets. And it depends on the city, the county, who owns the building. Is it large enough that if somebody has allergies to pets, that the pet can be in another, they can put that pet and that person in another part of the building. So there's all kinds of reasons why it was not successful. But in California, there is grant money available from the state to give homeless shelters the money to build kennels, to provide veterinary care and pet food. There's millions of dollars out there. All they have to do is apply for it. We do not accept government money for my organization. We rely on individuals, companies, private foundations, and trusts that give us money, and that's how we're able to stay afloat. We also have an endowment now that we are able to keep going, and so that I know that after I'm long gone, this organization will carry on.
How many people are in your organization? Across all five of the different facets you mentioned?
Well, we all wear a lot of hats. There are 8 full-time employees here.
Wow.
And we have over 300 volunteers across the country that Whoa. Work with us to either transport the pet food from a donation site over to a food bank, or to transport that food out to a homeless encampment. Because in forests where there's water, usually you'll see homeless camped along a waterway. I don't know how much you travel, but Portland and some areas of the West Coast that I've traveled on, people are living under highways and freeways. And I talked to one case manager that was very happy to hear about our program. And we do reach out to case managers, social workers, police officers, first responders, to let them know that if they come across somebody that needs our help, a pet that's injured or ill, they know who to call. But I was talking to one of these social workers the other day, and she was telling me that she helped a woman who just had a baby under a freeway bridge. I mean, homelessness has gotten so bad in America because wages have not kept up with rents. And we all know what real estate costs are now. We have a percentage of our clients that are homeless are employed, but it's not enough to get them that apartment deposit or the apartment and the utilities that are needed. A lot of our clients are elderly. They're living off their pension and their Social Security, and rents went up, and those two sources of income did not. So now they're living in their car two or three weeks out of the month, and maybe they have enough to spend a week in a motel somewhere that will allow their pet. So this is the kinds of things that we hear about every single day. We had in Santa Cruz, California, a young man working, was getting food stamps, had a van and a dog. And he bought the dog from another homeless man because the guy couldn't, you know, he couldn't handle it anymore. So he went into a convenience store. While he was in there, somebody threw a Molotov cocktail in that van and it exploded. The dog was burned severely on one side and had smoke in the, anyway, they were a animal control. Of course, the police came right away. Animal control came right away. And, you know, they had to deal with this burning vehicle in this parking lot. The animal control took the dog to a hospital. Luckily, one that we work with in Santa Cruz, they called us immediately and we said, okay, you know, we got the story. We interviewed the man. He was homeless for sure. So these are the kinds of things that happen to these people. And now they, somebody in animal control or the police department there gave him a tent to live in because he had lost everything he owned. He had no transportation now. So the dog needed hospitalization and it needed bandage changes every day plus antibiotics because there was an infection. And animal control was the one that was driving the dog from the animal control facility to the hospital every day. And then finally, they were able to reunite the dog with his owner. So, you know, there's kind of a tragic story, but it does have a happy ending. And the dog and the man are together again.
That's an amazing story. And it made me think too, like I talked to a lot of organizations and like, not only is it hard to expand in this industry, sometimes it's hard to just maintain. So I kind of have a two-part question for you is, one is, what did you do before all of this, right? Like, and my second question is what do you think is like one factor that's helped you? Like, you know, you don't only have one, you know, program, there's five, right? Like, obviously there's something you're doing, like, you know, you're not expanding too quickly. Like you're knocking these out. So like, what do you think is like one thing you've done that if another organization's listening to this, you've done it really well and they could maybe implement.
Thank you. Thank you. When we developed, when I got my first board of directors, and you know, they come and they go, but I have three of us are founding members. One of them is a doctor, one is one of my daughters, and myself. And so we were three out of, I think I at that time I had probably maybe eight. But, you know, they come and go. But anyway, when we decided what our mission was going to be, that mission statement, we stayed very focused. There were times when I thought, oh, maybe we could do this. And then it was, no, if we do that, then it's going to cost too much. We don't have the staff for it. We have to stay focused of what we do. And I unfortunately, a lot of the calls that we get, they end up not being homeless, but we can help them by giving them another resource of another organization that may be able to help them with the finance or with getting the pet food that they need. Sometimes it's just people, hey, I'm hard up. I'm barely keeping my house, but I need pet food. And we can tell them where to go get pet food. So, we have a lot of resources and we collaborate with a lot of people. If you haven't interviewed anybody from Street Dog Coalition, we work with them because they're veterinarians that donate their time to go out onto the street. They're just on the streets and they're looking for homeless with pets and they know the pockets in that town where they are. And they know that if it's a a situation where the animal can't be treated on the street, they instruct that person to give us a call, and then we take it from there. So we have a lot of collaborations with a lot of people. A lot of humane societies, they have low-cost clinics, and we will work with them. If we can send a homeless person there and they're a low-cost clinic, that's going to save us money instead of sending them to an emergency specialty hospital. So we're always looking for ways to cut costs. But at the same time, we have a lot of overhead. One of the things that I think a lot of organizations don't talk about is, yeah, we have these five programs and they all have a budget, and we try to keep within that budget based on the donations coming in. But one of the high cost things of doing business, and I ran a couple of businesses before I started this, and I had some background in public relations and marketing, so that helped me get things rolling. But as a business owner, I wanted this to be as transparent as I possibly could. Every single one of our annual reports and every single tax form is on our website with all of our other, our 501c3 determination. All of that is on the website. But we also realized, and I didn't know this the first couple of years as a nonprofit, once you're on a website and you're getting money from across the country, we get money from around the world, literally. It could be somebody that is been transferred to another country, but they understand what we're doing here, then they will donate money to us. But to be legal and ethical, we have to be registered as a charity in every single state that has that requirement. To do that, we had to hire an outside company to do all the forms and pay all the fees. And the fees are different. The forms are different. The agency in that state is a different agency. So we had to hire that company to do that. And then we realized that a lot of these states require an independent audit. So not only do we have to pay a CPA to do our taxes, but now we had to pay an independent audit. So just those two things alone are costing us over $12,000. Then you add another $10,000 for this other company to make sure that we are registered in all these states so that we can legally and ethically take donations. So if anybody in any state wants to find out, you know, is this organization legal, we are on Charity Navigator and we are also on GuideStar. So we have been vetted very, very carefully. So people that may get some of our direct mail or they get something from us, they know that we've been vetted and that we're a legitimate nonprofit.
I think that's awesome that you talk about like the it's not just like creating a nonprofit just isn't this like willy-nilly thing that people do. Like, there is a lot of work involved. There's a reason why I'm still not a non-for-profit for doing this. Like, it is what it is. And
it's a business. It's a real business.
It is. Yeah. And I think, and I like the fact that you talk about, even though it is a non-for-profit or you're taking, you know, donations, that you're still running it as a business, because at the end of the day, that's what's helping you not only like last since 2008. So what are we at? 14 years, but also like expand. I'm curious to know too, like how are some of these people finding you? Like, what's like, do you guys have like a big social media presence? Like, how are people from across the world finding you guys?
Yeah. You know, when the homeless call us, they have found us on the internet. through iPhones that they borrowed or through a public library. They're looking for resources that can get them through the day. We do have a big social media presence. On Facebook, we have 108,000 likes. On Instagram, we have about 2,600. Twitter, we have over 2,000. We're expanding all the time. So we do have a marketing director, and we have a monthly newsletter. So if anybody goes to our website at petsofthehomeless.org, that one of the pop-ups is to sign up for a monthly newsletter. That newsletter has subscriptions of over 13,000. And that every month that newsletter goes out, and it has a story of at least two animals that we've treated, and it has some other information as well. It keeps people updated, and so that they know how to get in touch with us and how to donate and where they can donate. So between that and I do a podcast as well called Give a Dog a Bone, and that's on YouTube and a couple of other channels as well. So the homeless find us because a lot of other organizations know who we are and what we provide, and so they will tell them, call them. And that's one of the questions when we do that interview. We do an intake interview, and that's one of the questions: how did you hear about us? And it's from another organization. And that's becoming more and more frequent, as well as word of mouth. In a homeless community, they all know where to get breakfast, lunch, dinner, clothing, because they share that information within their own little communities of homelessness. And so once one dog gets treated, then everyone in that town then knows who to call. And all of a sudden we'll get a lot of calls, especially this time of the year when Parvo starts really making a presence as the earth warms up, that virus is coming up. And so one puppy in an encampment will get parvo, and then all of a sudden we're getting phone calls from everyone. A lot of times people will ask, you know, where do these people get these dogs and these cats? And a lot of times they're going into homelessness with that pet. They've had this pet for 5 years. They're not going to drop it off at the animal shelter. Some people do, because they know that this is going to be another barrier for them to be in homelessness, because now they've got a dog that's with them, and it's hard to maneuver and have appointments and get a job. And, you know, a lot of apartments aren't going to allow dogs. And so, you know, having a pet when you're homeless, there are a lot of barriers, but that human animal, that comfort, that love, if they've had this pet for a long time, they're not going to give it up. And so we see that a lot. We see a lot of times in an encampment where there's, you know, five or six families all camped together. They share what they have. A litter of puppies will be born, and everybody in the camp will take a puppy. And now they don't realize what the financial responsibility of having a pet is. It is expensive. I mean, I can tell you, you know, you can go online and Google, what does it cost to have a dog for a year? It's thousands of dollars. And if you're a pet owner, and most of your viewers are, or they wouldn't be watching this, they know how expensive it is. And they know how much that pet means to them, their own pet. My pets at home on my bed, I'm sure, sleeping and waiting for me to come home. And she'll be very happy to see me when I do get home. But these pets are with these people 24/7, and it's hard to get separated from them.
Yeah, no, those are all great points. And I think it's definitely something we all need to take into consideration. And I wanted to ask you too, that you have so many different like problems that you're trying to solve, and like the future plans of feeding the pets of the homeless. Is there another, like if you were to add on a sixth sector or something you're not tackling, what do you think that is from what you're seeing?
I if I added another program, my staff would probably kill me. So yeah. I've overloaded them so much already that I don't think I could do it. I mean, I've always wanted to be able to, you know, when somebody is homeless and now they've been arrested for whatever reason, and that dog's going to go to the shelter. Animal control is going to pick it up and take it to the shelter, and that person may never see that dog again. If they do, they're going to have to come up with the bail money, if you pardon the, you know, if the dog's picked up, you're going to have to pay something to get that dog back. I mean, I would love to be able to do that, but I would also like to be able to make it easier for the homeless that are ill to go to the hospital. They won't, because they can't take their pet with them. They will die on the street. And if an ambulance comes, the dog's going to try to protect that person. The dog doesn't understand that ambulance driver is trying to get that person to the hospital for medical treatment. So it becomes this very aggressive, uncomfortable situation where the ambulance drivers have to call animal control to come and get that pet. Now the person's in the hospital, and we've had these calls. I'm homeless. I had to go to the hospital and they have my pet, and I'm going to be released from the hospital and I want my dog back. I mean, it breaks your heart because you know that means so much to that person. And now he's not going to be able to, he or she, to get that pet back. So, you know, if I was going to do another program, that would be it, to help these people get their animals back after they've been taken from them for whatever reason.
Yeah. And that's I like just not dealing with that is something that I didn't even really think of. So, you know, and that you're probably seeing, you know, on a weekly basis, if not daily basis. So thanks for sharing that with us. And I want to know too, where can everyone find you guys at? Like what's the website and the social media handles?
Yeah. On our website, of course, there's all the links that will get you to the social media. It's at the bottom. The website is petsofthehomeless.org. We tried to shorten it up a little bit because adding feeding to that, it just kind of made it way too long. Even now it's pretty long, but it is petsofthehomeless.org. Our phone number, if anybody is needing to get in touch with us, it is 775-841-7463. We had to get an answering service, so we're available 24/7. We will call somebody back within 24 hours of a business day. We get phone calls from the East Coast, from every time zone that there is. So our case managers are scrambling to try to get that phone call in before the end of the day. A lot of times they are taking phone calls from hospitals after hours when they've already gone home and they're trying to fix dinner for their family. And now they've got to take this phone call. I mean, it's a very stressful job because the average case takes at least six phone calls. because you get the person calling, and then you've got to call to get verification that they're homeless. Then you've got to find a hospital that'll work with us. If it's in a town that we don't have a hospital, now my case managers are having to cold call hospitals in that city to find somebody that will work with us. When we do that intake of that homeless person, one of the questions we ask is, do you have transportation, or can you get transportation? Because we're not going to make somebody carry a dog that's been hit by a car 10 miles to the hospital. It just doesn't, you know, we can't do that. So we always try to find a way to get the closest hospital in that area so that they don't have to walk so far, or get, you know, if it's a small dog, they can sometimes get on public transportation.
That's great. That's like all the social media, everywhere people can find you, all of that, including the phone number, no matter where you're listening, will be down in the description below. Good. I'm definitely going to, you know, I was already following you guys on Instagram, but I'm going to go ahead and follow you on Facebook. Check out your website, check out your newsletter. And I just want to thank you personally so much for coming on and sharing your story and everything your organization is doing to combat homelessness and just animal rescue. I think it's awesome. It's very unique.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, a lot of other organizations have picked up what we do, but in their own community, we're still the only national organization that is doing this across the country. We were the first, but now we're not the only.
that's you know, there's always going to be so many of these cases. It's great to see people picking up the torch, and hopefully too, you know, people can listen into what, you know, some of the things that you guys are doing absolutely awesome at, and maybe, you know, implement it where they see fit in their own organization. So,
yeah. And I'm always happy to help people start something like what we do or one of our programs in their own community, because then we can collaborate. If we get a phone call for somebody that is now doing that in their community, we're going to pass that on to that person. Here, call these people. They can help you. And they're local, so they're going to be able to help you even probably more than we can.
That's amazing. I want to thank you so much for coming on. What a great podcast. And definitely stay in touch.
Thank you.